Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hi, and welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate, and today I am interviewing my amazing, loving, handsome as hell husband, Patrick. So, hi.
Hi, Hen. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Excited to be on with you.
Yes, our post-kids in bed recording session.
Yes, they're upstairs reading.
In our cool recording studio, aka our family room. Lori and I thought it was a good idea to have Patrick kind of share a little bit of his perspective. Patrick and I, how long have we been married, babe?
10 years.
No.
12 years.
Dear Lord.
12 years. Yeah, that's correct.
You so quickly said 10 years.
At least I had a figure. You were nowhere. But you don't math.
I don't math. This is very true. Yeah, so we've been married for 12 years and 3 kids, lots of pets, 2 houses, lots of life lived together. And in the middle of kind of all of that life living together is all of this mess. So we wanted to share his perspective on that and what it's like to be a spouse kind of supporting someone going through this kind of trauma, what it's like to be my spouse specifically supporting me going through this journey. So I guess let's start at the beginning. So we met in the Dominican Republic on a mission trip. Funny thing, though, is that we both grew up on Grand Island. Mm-hmm. We both went to the same high school. You were a year ahead of me?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, 1 year ahead.
So a year ahead of me in school. I like knew who you were.
I mean, yes.
People know me.
People know me. This is the joke, yes.
Patrick was in musicals.
I did, yeah. I was in a lot of musicals.
Yep.
And yeah, I enjoyed those. And
he
never came to see mine, though. So
that's not true.
Which one's
it? It might
number?
Be true. I don't know.
I see that.
I don't know if I went to any of them, to be honest. I was not that girl. But so we didn't know each other. I knew who he was, but we didn't know each other. And then, like, fast forward into adult life, I'm in college, and we meet each other on this mission trip. So.
Right, yeah, we actually met, in the planning stages of it, right, is when because it was at the church when we were planning, the trip and everything, and we were planning, and then we ended up rehearsing the skit and stuff, and that's when we actually met, right?
Let's talk about the skit we did. For those of you, early 2000 youth group kids out there, I'm sure you remember the Bright Eyes skit. If you don't know what that is, you might be able to Google it. It's probably on YouTube.
Isn't the song by isn't it the Lifehouse skit?
That's a different skit. Yeah, I know. This is the Bright Eyes skit. And I was the girl, and Patrick was Sexo. So it was pretty perfect.
Sexo and I think it was Abuso. / Sexo and Abuso. Yeah. So they talk about on the nose a bit, right?
we connected on this mission trip. We met, like you said, before it. Tell a story about your dad.
Yeah, so it's a funny story. My dad and I were going on this trip together. I think he had approached me and asked if I was interested to join him. He had been on trips prior. And so he said, do you want to come with me? And I did. I was excited about it. It was a medical mission trip. Neither of us are medical in any way, shape, or form.
You played a doctor once on TV, though.
Yeah. So we were just going along to help any way we could. We raised the funds and went on the trip. And, I already had met Kate, again, in preparation mode for that. But then on the trip, I decided that I wanted to get closer to her. And so I started spending time around her and making kind of any excuse I could to be near her on the trip. And in that, I kind of left my dad kind of off to the side. So the joke was that, you know, I spent so much time with Kate on the trip that no one knew that I was there with my dad. And honestly, like the last day, so this is the last day of the trip, and like people were getting up and sharing testimonies and stuff. And my dad gets up and gives this like wonderful, emotional, you know, little talk about how great it was to be on this trip with his son. And like several people turned around and looked at him and were like, I didn't know your son was on this trip. Because I literally just spent the whole time following Kate around. So wow. Not in a stalkerish way. So,
no, not at all.
Super cool way. Super cool.
So yeah, life before we got married. You know, a lot of people have asked me about like how I was able to get married, how I was able to have kids, especially with all the trauma that was happening and all the things that were going on. So I guess my best answer to that is the church me part of me, right? We've talked so much about church me and this kind of like front facing persona and just like shove all the bad stuff in a box and do all the things, go on the mission trips, right? Give my testimony, which is just a tiny bit of, you know, oh, my life is hard. And then all the things. That was a little brutal. But anyways, church me was running my life. And so I kept the boxes closed. I kept everything going. If I, you know, my thought process was if I can just be better, then I can have this life too. I told myself the narrative that they always said that I was dramatic when I was younger, that the story of minimal abuse that, oh my gosh, she came out. Sorry, our cat is adjusting to downstairs and there she is. She came out of hiding. Anyways, so, you know, the minimal abuse by one person in the family who had moved away and all was fine, but I'm good. I'm healed. Praise Jesus. You know, all of that. So in believing that, it kind of never made me want to talk about it because it would start to open those boxes. So the conversation about my past was super minimal when we started dating. Not to mention, let me just backtrack for a second. We were also long distance for the first 4 months of our dating relationship. Because literally 2 days after we got back from the mission trip, or the day after we got back, moved to Washington, D.C. To do an internship there. So what do you remember, I guess, about all of that time?
Like you said, I think it was really, there wasn't much to talk about it. You know, obviously, initially, we didn't talk about it at all, probably while you were in D.C. I don't think, you know, it came up at all. I think when you moved back home after the internship and decided to do your last year online, you know, and we started to get serious is when, you know, when it came up. And, you know, it was a brief conversation, right? I remember we were at my parents' house, which was interesting because we did not spend a lot of time at my parents' house. We'll talk more about that later. But I remember we were at my parents' house, and that's probably, you know, I was not to presume your feelings, but you probably felt safer talking about it there, I imagine, than you did in your own home with your parents around. But we were there, you know, in my parents' basement, I remember, and just it was casual, you know, in terms of we were getting serious, and you told me that you just needed to tell me something, right? And yeah, filled me in on the narrative about, you know, the one uncle, one time out of the picture, you know, the parents did everything they could and all that kind of business.
Yeah. It was the narrative that was pretty much scripted.
Yeah. And I didn't care. Right. I mean, I was in love with you at that point. You know, and, you know, I knew that sexual abuse was, you know, again, unfortunately, look at the statistics. It's ever present, right? It's happened to so many women in our society. It was not something that was a red flag. It was not something that was going to change anything for me. And I was happy to leave it in the past. So that's what I remember about that piece of it.
Yeah. Otherwise though, I mean, dating was pretty normal, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was very normal. You know, we spent as much time as we possibly could together. I visited you in DC. and I remember, you know, that one strange thing I remember, you know, and looking back through our relationship and some of the weird parts that had to do with your family, that when I came to visit you in DC, you told me about a letter that your dad had written you about, like, I think like concerns about us getting physically intimate was the idea. I never read it, but I remember you telling me he made a comment about, you don't want to let sparks turn into flames or something like that, something kind of ridiculous, like some analogy like that. And I just kind of glossed it off as like, he's just trying to, you know, keep his daughter pure, I guess. But now knowing what he actually was having his daughter do all those years, it's an awfully ridiculous letter to write.
To be honest too, I actually forgot about that until you put it in this outline. Like, I completely just forgot. And when you mentioned it, when we were talking about this episode, I had this like horrible, like, oh yeah. Like, I remember, and I don't even remember exactly what the letter said, but it definitely was not, you know, quite as innocent as just like, oh, be careful.
Yeah. No, I bet it wasn't.
Yeah. So, we had a lot of arguments.
Yeah. I think we, you know,
mostly about,
yeah, about spending how much time we spent with my family, which is kind of funny because we really spent a ton of time at your house when we were dating. Right. So looking back, it's a little bit goofy, but you know, it really wasn't arguments about day to day who we spent time with. It was holidays. Right.
Yeah.
My family is a big family. My mom's family specifically is very close. And there's like 20 of us who are very close. And so every, you know, back then, every single person's birthday, every holiday, you know, I think I was having you go to two different places for just my side of the family on a holiday, and then also trying to get your family in the mix. But then, yeah, literally every weekend, even my buddies growing up used to tease me. They'd ask me, you know, was I free this coming weekend to hang out? And I'd have a birthday party every weekend, which I loved growing
up. Christiana just said that to me on Friday. She's like, you literally have so many families over. And I'm like, no, I don't really notice it as much anymore.
Yeah. And I grew up in that. So I loved that. And, you know, my family were also my friends. Like, my cousins were my friends. You know, my aunts and uncles were cool. It was like a very, very chill. We just hung out. We just hung out. It wasn't ever, you know, and it didn't ever feel like I have to be there. I truly wanted to be there. And I think that was part of what you didn't understand was like, listen, why do you want to go to all these parties all the time? But that was how, you know, that's how.
Okay. But also keep in mind that when we, again, like, we're kind of pulling this apart, when we look back on those dating years, what I see is, yeah, we fought a lot about your family and the time that we spent with them. But what we never talked about, because I didn't see it for what it was, is the conflict that I was having from my own family. There was so much pressure being put on me from, especially my mom, kind of feeding this to me of like, that family is too close. They do too many things together. You should tell Patrick that you don't want to do that. Like, there was so much of that being fed to me. You know, I was still living at home, and I feel like you're raging inside.
I think, and because I know you've told me this, right? But I think, and you shielded me from that, right? I did not know.
Well, because I didn't see it for what it was. Like, I was just kind of like, yeah, okay, you're right.
Yeah. And look, you know, our family, my family, my mom's family, I would say we are in the minority of families who are like that, right? Who are as large and as close and do everything together. I mean, we see each other multiple times a week, most of the time, you know, and again, I love that. I grew up in that. I think you've come to love that and see, you know, the love that they have for you, especially through this, but even, you know, when we had kids and the support system that is, you know, so, but it was certainly a culture shock for you, having been, you know, and my mom talks about this often, how they saw your family as very strange because it was only ever you, your parents, your brother and sister-in-law, and that's it. The five of you. And then, so I was six, and it was only ever the six of us. Sometimes on a holiday, there'd be another aunt and uncle that would come, you know, but almost always it was just the super, super small, close-knit group. And they thought that was weird. So the real, you know, was probably somewhere in the middle is mostly normal. So we each came from a different end of the spectrum, but you know, there definitely was, you know, people could see that, like, you know, the family being so tight knit and not anybody else being around on the cook side was, you know, was strange.
Yeah, no, I agree. And also, just, this isn't even in here, but, being like, going to these big parties with your family was also super triggery for me. Right. Which I don't think I even shared with you for a long time because, you know, a lot of times parties meant bad things were happening in the basement or whatever. Yeah. And so, I mean, cause my family, anyway,
that's what they did.
So it was very triggery for me as well. And so I, like, again, not being able to really sort through that. It's not like I had a therapist back then to be like, so I'm having all these things, you know, I wish I did, honestly, but
Where were you, Lord?
Yeah. All right. Let's jump to premarital counseling. So Patrick proposed with a cookie cake. Cutest thing ever.
That was very cute.
We were babies.
The people at Mrs. Fields loved me.
Yeah, I bet they did.
I was adorable.
You were. We were. We were like, when you proposed, I was 21, right? Yep. 21. You probably, were what? 23. 23. So we were babies.
Just
us. But yeah, he proposed with a cookie cake. So, so, so cute. And we were engaged for a year before we got married. So we went to premarital counseling with the pastor who married us, who also happened to be the same pastor that ran the missions trip that we had gone on when we met.
Right.
So he was my youth pastor growing up, which we have talked about a bit, how youth group was, et cetera. But he believed he believed the like dramatic version of me, that I was very dramatic, that I was basically a problem. When I look back at our premarital counseling, I almost see it as him being like, I don't know, like, Patrick, are you sure you know what you're getting into? Because like I was so problematic.
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't even see that, whether I was listening closely or not. Again,
looking back.
Yeah. Nothing he was going to say was going to change it for me. I think it got completely glossed over, right? Like,
it did.
You know, I do remember him bringing up the fact that, like, the abuse history or whatever. But again, the narrative that we'd always talked about, which was it was once, it was whatever, it's in the past. it was brought up in a joint session, and you were like, yep, we're good. And I was like, yep, no issues. And we moved on from it. You know, obviously, knowing what we know now, and knowing what he knew. So again, this is the guy who was Kate's youth pastor, who was very involved in a lot of the, or who knew at least about the escape attempts, yeah, right? And the different things that had been going on with you in your younger years. He knew all of those things, and he has a very clear idea about those things. And yet he kind of doesn't really bring it up as anything serious at all, when clearly he thinks it is. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason that we know what he thinks about it is because we actually have a transcript from a conversation that he had with your brother and sister-in-law when they were running one of their little investigations. And they went and talked to him because they wanted to know more about what had happened in the past. And asked him a bunch of questions. And some of the things that he said, now again, this is the man who married us. This is the man, and it makes me angry, right? So you can hear my voice
your raging. Yeah,
kind of shaking, right? But the man who married us, the man who we thought was doing a great thing for us. And yet these are the things he actually thought about you and the things he still thinks about you today. So again, not naming him. Anybody, if you know the pastor who married us, you know who this is. So in response to one question they had, he says this: I also know that in high school that Kate was very dramatic and very much used her emotional instability to get attention. So I don't know if that is still happening, if there are other issues going on that have nothing to do with the abuse, but using the abuse because in high school that gave her a tool for people to show concern and pity for her. This is said by this man just over a year ago today.
Yeah.
Right. Unbelievable, right? I mean, saying that you're using your abuse to get pity. That's what he thinks.
Yeah. Honestly, we've said this in the escape attempts episodes, but I mean, any adult saying that about a child, you know, and at the time that he knew me in high school, I was still a kid. I was, you know, 15, 16 years old. Having that be what you think about a child that's disclosing abuse is just, I mean,
it's sickening.
Dear Lord.
Sickening. And it, there's more that we'll say about that. Here's his next response. My first thing in hearing all this, my instinct is to ask, what is Kate trying to hide? What is she trying to cover up? Is there something else that she has done or that she's trying to hide through a diversion? Or she may very well be suffering from something very mental where she does believe these things, but they actually aren't true. I mean, if that's not the definition of victim blaming, mm-hmm, I don't know what is. But again, just absolutely ridiculous to say that you're either trying to cover something else up or that you're mentally unstable.
Yeah.
Which again, I mean, you talked about that Darvo episode he's not even one of the people that was involved, as far as I understand.
No.
But he is turning it around on you as if he was, as if, you know, and turning himself into the victim and you into an offender, or something's wrong with you, right? Which is just absolutely unbelievable.
Right. People might be asking themselves at this point too, like, why? So if this guy was so terrible and he like thought all these horrible things about you, why in the world would you have gone on this mission trip with him? Why in the world would you have had him marry you? But the thing is, two things. First of all, I didn't know that that's what he thought. No. I mean, I knew that the escape attempts had failed in high school. But again, the second thing I'll say is church me was in control. And so church me believed these things. Church me was like, everybody is right. Everybody, like, how many times can I try to disclose abuse and be told that it's just, it's my fault, I'm the problem, that I'm being dramatic, and not internalize that and think, well, I guess they're right, especially for someone like him. I mean, this is my youth pastor, right? Basically going around telling people that I'm not to listen to me, that I'm dramatic. So I guess why did he marry us? Because I told myself those things, you know?
And because we met on the trip with him as a leader, I obviously had no idea about anything.
Yeah.
So it seemed great. Hey, we met literally kind of under this guy's leadership, and it'd be so, what a neat story for him to then be the one to marry us. Well, little did we know.
Yeah.
And so the last thing that I'll say about what he said is, this is his last quote, is, if you're looking at the evidence says she's fabricating this. It would seem to me that she may be dealing with some serious mental health issue right now. Again, just completely attacking the victim, right? Like, does he have any understanding of the fact that in the majority of sexual abuse cases, there is no evidence? It's he said, she said, right? Like, I mean, it sounds like the guy has lived under a rock since 1950. And it's just the more concerning part. He also goes on to say more, and I don't have this in quote in front of me. He also goes on to say more about the fact that he knows what an abuser looks like because his dad was an abuser. And so therefore he knows for sure that your parents weren't. Again, a complete mischaracterization, right? Like, absolutely incorrect. Every abuser is different. Just because you've seen one doesn't mean you know every single abuser in the future going forward.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll say about him, and then we'll move on. The scariest thing about him is that he is an elder current day at a Western New York church serving today. He has access to young people, not children, I don't believe, but young people. And he has access to their hearts and minds. And the pastor of the church he attends knows that this is what he thinks and is hoping that he'll have a change of heart. That's what the pastor is doing about it. So it's a very concerning thing that I want the greater Western New York area to know about, because he's not the only one. There are people all around who think like this, and that's why it's so important to be careful and be mindful of where you're leaving your kids, who you're leaving them with. There are people who think this way. And then there are other people who ought to do something about people that think this way. And instead, all they do is they hope. They hope that they're going to change their minds.
Well, this is also a tangent here, but this is also a situation that we see repeatedly that Christiana and I have talked about in our episode, and Lori and I have talked about in several episodes, where, you know, there's people who can be like all on board and like, yeah, I believe you. And then they hit the wall of someone being involved, or someone being complicit, or someone not doing it right, being someone that they know or are close to. And all of a sudden it's like, no, like all bets are off. Right.
Right.
That's basically what happened here. This local pastor reached out to us, was all about it, you know, come on my podcast, I support you guys. And then bam, it hit him in the face. This is, you know, an elder at his church. This is someone that he knows that we're talking about in an escape attempt episode. And all of a sudden it's like, all bets are off, you know, and he kind of backs away slowly.
Yep. Yeah. So the last note I have here is that we both regret that this man married us at this point, obviously, and we're looking forward to being able to renew our vows. So one of these days.
One of these days we will, when our lives are not so crazy.
Yes.
All right. So yeah, moving on to wedding planning.
What a treat.
Everybody in the world should just elope. there was so much conflict when we were doing wedding planning, which I don't think is surprising to anybody who's had to plan a large wedding. there's just conflict. I always tell people that I feel like wedding planning just brings out the worst in people. And I think that, that I'm not alone in that, but the dynamics between, my mom and I and my family and I, was toxic and tense. My mother's opinion was fact. I didn't really see it as that then, but, now I see it so clearly that she really manipulated a lot of the planning. Not a lot of it. She manipulated the planning. none of it was about me and you. She had a whole narrative in, you know, about your family that she constantly fed into my head. That's what I was talking about before. Like, you know, that they're just too close to each other, that they, you know, only think about what people care about, you know, or right. only think about mm-hmm. how people see them, you know, all the things. She was completely in control. I was completely in her control. I had a lot of fear about going against her, but I never could like express that or open that box. It was kind of one of those things that was like bubbling to the surface. And it was just like, nope, like I'm getting married. I'm engaged. Yay. Like I'm a child basically like doing this. And like, I mean, not really, but, I had no, again, no means to open that box. It was pretty much just like, I don't know, she's in control. So just like let go and let church me pretend that this is okay. Right. So. How did you experience the planning?
Yeah, I mean, I did everything I could to stay out of the planning, frankly, as I think most smart grooms do. you know, again, I was excited that we were getting married. I didn't really care. I certainly do remember a few of the main points of contention. And I know that one of them was 100% your mother's doing, right? She tried to make it be this thing that was, you know, because of her family. And there were all these kind of reasons. And this was so important. And at the end of the day, again, I go back to thinking that it's just because she wanted to appear the good Christian mother holier than everybody else.
Yeah.
And it caused a really big problem between, you know, my family and you, you know, that thankfully, obviously, is all water under the bridge now. But, you know, yeah, it's you know, it was not great. There was a lot of, you know, tension for sure. I've long said that wedding planning is where in-law relationships get a lot of their tension from. And I think that's a very real thing. You know, thankfully, you know, again, like we're in a great place with my family now. We're completely away from your family now. Also great. you know, but yeah, it was not great. And she drove a lot of that. And again, like from my perspective, I didn't see a ton of that. You know, again, that was what you were seeing, you know, between you and her. So,
okay. So, you know, obviously wedding planning leads into married life. The relationship that we had with my parents, again, super controlling, but in like a very kind of backdoor way, right? My dad did all of our car repairs for free, but it was definitely kind of like hung over us. Like there were strings attached and, just, yeah, lots of controlling things, our cell phone plan, our Easy Pass, like lots of things. They used money at this point to kind of control us together. So again, it all looks okay from the outside. Like, well, that's so lucky that you have, you know, your car repairs for free. But that comes with a price to pay. And then again, you know, we have kids, we have three kids. There's a lot of control there. There's a lot of competition there. My mom, again, kind of like came out in this, just like being in competition with your parents constantly. She always wanted to have the birthday gift first, you know, because she wanted the big birthday gift, the wow gift, right? And wanted to make sure that it was her that had it and not your parents.
Yeah, and that competition had been going on for a long time. This just stepped it up.
Yeah.
Brought to a new level.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, the theme, I guess, of our relationship with them, again, looking back, I didn't see it for what it was then. It was just so normal to me because they had been controlling me for my whole life. But it really was, it came down to control.
Yeah. And I mean, I saw it in a ton of ways, but the way I saw it most was, I mean, you'd be on the phone with your mom daily, which is not a strange thing for mothers and daughters, but it was like for a lot of time every day. And what I came to find out was that like you'd be running everything, every single little detail of your day by her, like for her approval. And if it wasn't something that was going to fit in for her, or you couldn't do something that she also wanted you to do, that's when she'd come hit you with a major guilt trip.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I remember seeing and just being like in disbelief that we were allowing that to happen in your relationship with her. So,
yeah,
you know, thank God that's done.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, fast forward. You know, we've talked so much about on the podcast about my daughter, Evelyn, being born, our daughter. Usually I say my because it's usually not my, it's not you. Our baby girl, Evelyn, was born. And that, like, literally shattered so many of the boxes. It was like, I will never forget laying in bed and, like, watching her sleep and just being, like panic-stricken. Because I knew that I couldn't continue. Like, I don't even know if I had those words for it, but I just knew that, like, something was not okay. It was like everything was breaking down inside of me and I didn't know what to do. And I actually didn't even do anything about it. I literally struggled and tried to wrestle the things back in the box for almost a year. Evelyn was a year old before I even came to you and said, you know, I'm not okay. I'm really not okay. And I think that I need to talk to someone about this. So yeah, I guess what was that like for you when I said that to you?
Yeah. I mean, it was certainly overwhelming, right? I mean, at this point we've been married like 7 years, I think. And overall, I mean, we had a great relationship, like sure. Like there's family stuff or whatever, but you know,
we're awesome.
I thought our marriage was going really great. And so, you know, I had no inkling that like we were about to hit this massive iceberg, right? And it was overwhelming. You know, I understood it certainly. Like, again, I understand that, again, the statistics on sexual abuse are staggering in terms of people who have experienced it, women specifically, but men as well. And I understood that, of course. Sure, you're going to need some help to work through it. Like, okay, that's no problem. Like, it seemed like it was all fine, but it's not all fine. That's okay. That's no problem, right? But sure, caught off guard, it was overwhelming. I do remember, like, to what you were just speaking to, like, I remember that you hadn't slept, like, in ages. Like, it felt like you never slept anymore. And I knew that, but I was like, well, I guess she's just getting old.
well, I also am, so that's actually a really fair assessment.
But, yeah, I mean, I remember that. That was the one thing, that's the only thing I could look at and say, like, oh, you know, something was not quite right. But, again, I wrote it off as, you know, as
I'm old.
Nothing. Yeah. And again, she was still balancing everything else. Right. I mean, she was balancing being a mom. She had worked part-time. She was working right then, but she had been working on and off. You know, she ran her household. There was not something where it was like, oh man, she can't even make it through a day. Like, she is strong. And so, you know, looking back, I really didn't know. So it caught me off guard, but I understood it. And so that was, you know, that was okay. I was up for it. I was up for, you know, supporting you through whatever it took.
Yeah. I know you said it was also hard because when I first came to you and told you this and I started talking to Lori, I couldn't tell you what we were talking about. And so I would leave, you know, we kind of manipulated our schedule. You manipulated your work schedule. And we did tell your parents, you know, pretty quickly into it, just that we were going to need some help with babysitting because all of our kids, I think at least Finn and Evelyn, were both still at home with me.
Yep.
You know, no one was in school really except for Noah, which that was also part of maybe what broke the actual camel's back. But Noah, that same year, mm-hmm. Evelyn turned one and Noah went to kindergarten.
Sorry, kindergarten,
right. And I literally like lost it. But yeah. It was really hard for you because I would leave and for like 2 hours and come home and like not be able to tell you. Right. Like,
yeah, that was hard. Again, we're married 7 years at that point, you know, we're best friends, had been, still are, you know, but yeah, it's hard when, you know, you would come home and I think early on I would ask you like, hey, how did it go? And I remember, I don't know if it was the first time, but I remember one time, yeah, you literally kind of had to say to me like, we can't talk about this. And that was really hard for me to swallow. Again, looking back, I understood it in the moment. It hurt me, you know, and part of it was selfishness, right? I look back and think about the fact that I've made plenty of mistakes. I still do, right? I still make mistakes in saying things and doing things I shouldn't do. Things I sometimes don't realize, sometimes I should realize, and I still kind of say they or do the wrong thing. But, you know, it was selfishness, right? Thinking that, like, again, you, people who talk to therapists don't always disclose that kind of stuff to anybody else, right? And it didn't matter that, you know, I was your husband. You were just taking the very first baby steps of this. And, you know, I wish I had I wish I knew then what I know now, you know, but thankfully, you know, I was able to kind of get with the program pretty quickly. I did, you know, a bunch of reading, trying to figure out more about, you know, sexual abuse and survivors and, you know, what the healing process really looks like. So that was helpful.
Yeah, no, it is. It's been helpful that you kind of, did a lot of research and educated yourself. You know, I know you've said it's not hard to do.
No, it's not. I have often said it's not hard to become trauma informed, but it does take a desire to do so. And there have been so many people that have been on this path with us that are not on this path with us anymore. You know, in my opinion, pretty specifically, because they didn't have the desire to do what it took to understand complex trauma. It doesn't take much, but it does take a desire. And the people who didn't desire to do that are no longer on the journey with us, right?
So, the chapel. Just
more than them.
Oh, yes. Many more than them. But let's just, you know, we can always highlight that when it's available. Yeah. So as pieces of it came out, I guess, how did you work your way through that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talked about this kind of recently. And the truth is I, you know, sometimes I would work my way through and sometimes I wouldn't. So I went to see a therapist at one time. And it didn't really work out. It was not, you know, a great jumping off point. You know, I wasn't in therapy for me. I was in therapy to help me figure out what was going on with you. And so, like, when the therapist was, like, asking me questions about my relationship with my mother as a young child, it was like, this is not really helping me. This is not, I need to know how to help an abuse survivor and what I can expect and what I should, you know, talking about that is what I do, not about my past. So that wasn't really helpful. That didn't continue. You know, but I do remember, you know, when you would, you know, again, this is now fast forward several years, right? But when you would be able to kind of tell me things, you know, it was a feeling of, I kind of already knew that, right? Like, I remember, you know, specifically when you, you know, that I would have suspicions about things. I mean, there's the specific one I remember is, from the very beginning, you were so adamant that your father was not involved, that he was not, that he never touched you, that he never hurt you. And it wasn't that I didn't believe you. It wasn't that I didn't trust you. It was just that in my gut, I felt different. And, you know, again, that was, you know, it took a lot of, you know, uncovering, a lot of healing to be able to get to the place where you said, like, yeah, I was wrong. That wasn't true. You know, he was very directly involved and he did hurt me. You know, and I wasn't surprised because I always just felt it. So there have been things like that where, you know, where I just kind of knew already. And there have also been things that I honestly probably really haven't worked through enough. You know, I probably do need to see someone, and probably should, because I feel like there's probably things I ought to talk about more than I have. You know, we are in a really good place now where we can talk, you know, pretty much about anything. But I think it probably would be smart for me eventually. And for any spouse who is walking alongside someone who's healing from this, to maybe get help themselves to have, you know, a space to be able to heal. I had been starting to do that a little bit with my dad, not that he's a licensed therapist, he's not. but then he had to go and get a job. You know, it's like, come on, Dad, what happens to my free therapy?
Was it therapy or was it just you guys talking about how you're going to be vigilantes?
Yeah, we really were. We had some good plans. Lots of good talks. Good Lord. We got to get back to that, Dad.
But yeah, so that's, we're still walking through the mess. As you said, you know, we've gotten to a place where we can talk about it more, a lot more, candidly, I guess. Not that it's not still hard sometimes. And there's,
for sure.
I mean, you said to me the other day, like, I, you know, was struggling and you were like, I can tell now by your face. I can tell when you're on your phone and you're talking to Lori versus when you're talking to anybody else. I don't talk to a lot of other people, but, you know, and I, we definitely have come miles mm-hmm. from where we were, you know, 4.5, 5 years ago.
Absolutely.
In this journey, but we are nonetheless still kind of walking through this mess, especially with the podcast and the safety issues and it being public. So, you know, being public is a good thing in that hopefully there's safety in numbers, but also being public has been a really hard thing, right? So how are you managing that, babe?
Yeah. So again, probably not as well as I ought to be. You know,
hard on yourself.
Even we talked about recently, like, you know, part of what I'm doing is just forging ahead. Right. And honestly, not even thinking about it in terms of like a conscious choice, but subconsciously like, okay, today's a work day. I have to work. I'm thinking about my work, thinking about where the kids are going to be. And, you know, you're at work and I put my head down and I go to work. Right. Like, and there's a lot of days that it doesn't really cross my mind that much. But as we discussed recently, that's probably not the best approach, right? Like I need to be more invested in, you know, where are you, you know, much more often in the day than I'm thinking about that. You know, are you okay? You know, so I need to be, you know, I need to not have my head in the sand, which sometimes is again, subconsciously just where it goes to. You know, but so, yeah, so I think, you know, there's that. I think there's also, you know, one hard thing that has been true for both of us is watching the kids walk through this. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah. You know, they lost and thank God they did. Right. I mean, we can say that, but it doesn't make it any less sad. You know, for them, they lost their grandparents and, you know, their aunts and uncles and cousins on your side of the family. And that was really hard for them. They were, you know, Noah was best of friends with his cousin. And, you know, in the long run, it's absolutely obviously zero, you know, and there's no way in which it wasn't their correct choice. It absolutely was. And I'm thankful that we made it. And we've also been, we haven't cut any corners with the kids, right? We've been honest with them in terms of what, you know, the Cook family has done and what they did in the past, what they have current day done, which is why we can't be in a relationship with them. They still don't really probably get all of it. But I think being honest and being real with them has helped. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's tough, you know, to watch them. I know they have, when you have a hard day, sometimes they have a hard day, you know, like yeah, Finn the other day came in the room when you were having a hard time and he was having a hard time, you know, mm-hmm. But the five of us are together, right? That's, you know, and obviously my family has been great, as you've mentioned on here. immediate family, extended family has been fantastic. And their support and love gets us through a lot. And the five of us being together get us through, you know, so that's a big deal. You know, one other way I try to get through it is I watch a lot of vigilante movies. So, you know, Man on Fire,
Law Abiding Citizen,
one of my favorites. Like, I've got so many plans. Oh, I don't know how they always got away with it.
You can't say
like,
that on here.
I can't go to jail. Like, I'm not going to, because I can't go to jail, but they never had to go to jail. Like, Denzel didn't go to jail.
Well, Denzel's dead.
So, you know, anyway, I like to watch them and live vicariously through them. So that it feels like, you know, but I obviously can't take matters into my own hands or I'll end up in jail. And I'm not the one who's supposed to be in jail here. Yeah. So
going back to the kids, you are absolutely right that they have tough days when I have tough days. But the one thing that is so helpful for us to be able to remind them, especially when they don't get as sad as often about losing, you know, the people that they've lost through this. But when they do, we can so quickly and easily remind them of how many people that they do have that love them.
Sure.
You know, it's not just, oh, you have another set of grandparents, but they have, I mean, literally like 20 people, people that you consider immediate family would literally lay down their life for any one of our kids.
100%. And plus, like you said, the extended family who, you know, has been supporting us so well, also who we maybe don't see once or twice a week, but are still have been very, very present and, you know, yeah, there's just tons and tons of people. And yeah, when the kids get sad, again, it's not even right now anymore. It's hardly about the family that they've lost.
Yeah.
It's because they see you being sad and they hate that, right? Like they want everything in the world. They would give anything in the world for you to not be sad.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're trying to lift you. And I think, honestly, I think they do a fantastic job of lifting you up. You know, they're not, you know, slightly biased perhaps, but they are actually the best kids ever. So
clearly anybody who's met them, Christiana was like, I don't even really like kids and I love yours, so proof, you know.
Yep.
So is there anything that you want to add or say or point out or that you haven't already said or that I haven't already asked?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is like, and it's a simple statement, but like believe survivors, right? Like, again, the statistics bear this out. You guys have talked about them on the podcast time and time again. And there's survivors aren't lying. They're just not, you know, the statistics show. I'm a numbers guy. I'm not an accountant like my brothers. They
even though I say that all the time.
Yeah, she says I'm an accountant. She doesn't really know what I do. It is above board, I promise. She just doesn't know what it is. I'm not an accountant, you know, but the numbers don't lie, right? Like, they, you know, the 2% or whatever it is of what false reports, even those have reasons behind them, right? Like a custody battle, things of that nature. Survivors are telling the truth. So take it at face value and support them and figure out what you can do to help them and believe them. To survivors, and I said to spouses even dealing with this, walking through it, if you need help, please get real help. Please don't go to biblical counseling. You know, I'm not here to completely just bash that. I think Lori has even said on here, if you have like a little tiny bump in the road life issue that you like to talk to someone at your church about, no problem. But if you have a major life issue, complex trauma life issue, those people are not qualified. And you need to get someone who can give you real help. So please do that. And please don't let anybody tell you that that's not the correct thing to do, because it absolutely, absolutely is. The other thing I want to talk about a little bit, and not too long, because I know we don't want to go too much longer, is it's okay not to forgive people. I don't know who is out there who needs to hear that. And I know that there might be a lot of people out there who disagree with me, and I'm cool with that. But it's okay to not forgive people for things that they have done to you, especially if it's things like this, physical, sexual abuse, rape, right? All of trafficking, you don't have to forgive those people. And I think when we first started this journey, I would say to you, and part of me still thinks this, but I hope someday that maybe you can forgive so that you feel better. But they don't deserve forgiveness, in my opinion. And so, you know, again, maybe this makes me a bad Christian. I'm okay with that. I'll make my peace with that between me and God. It's okay to not forgive people who have harmed you in this way, especially if they have not come forward and confessed and apologized to start that process. Absolutely then, right? But in any case, I don't care even if that did happen. If you could never forgive your family for what they did to you, that has no bearing on your relationship with me, on what I think about you. And frankly, it has no bearing on whether or not you're going to heaven. So, you know, that's what I think about that. You know, and the last things are things that I've said to you in the past, right? I'm honored that I get to be the one to walk through this with you. I feel like, you know, we talked about this the other night. I don't know all of what my purpose is in life. Obviously, some of it is to be a dad and some of it is to be your husband. But I think that getting a chance to walk through this with you and walk side by side with you and arm in arm is truly part of what God put me on this earth for. It's part of my purpose in life to be here with you and be here for you. And I, you know, that being the case, I'm not doing it, like I said, very well all the time, but I am honored to that God chose me for that reason. And I truly am. So, and the last part I think I would say is that, and we've talked about this as well, I think the best is yet to come for us, for hopefully for survivors elsewhere, right? Even in the thick of this, when we're struggling and when there's things that aren't going our way day to day, the best is yet to come. I look back on the first 7 years of our marriage before any of this, any of the boxes open, and I thought they were in large part great, right? I was happy with our marriage. We had a family. I was very, very pleased. But to think that all of this was lying beneath the surface and we still had a really great marriage, now that it's coming out and you're going to get a chance to actually, for the first time ever, a true shot at healing and be able to get past this eventually, the best is yet to come. There's no doubt in my mind. And so I look forward to that. I look forward to, you know, our future together and, you know, and our kids growing up and just being a family together, with all the people who have supported us and loved us along the way. So I and I know it's a strange thing to say maybe on this podcast, but I'm excited for the future. I'm not scared. I know that the best is yet to come. And I'm thankful for that.
I'm thankful for you, babe.
I love you.
I love you so much. Way much.
The most.
Also, if anybody would like to comment on whether or not Patrick should say yes to another puppy, please feel free to do so.
Not happening.
Yeah, that would be really helpful. I mean, if you want to help, people keep asking how they can help. Like, this is how you can help.
You can help by donating to the SPCA.
No.
Please find.
Get out of here.
Your local, local branch.
Anyway, thank you for listening. As always, you know, like us on Instagram, Facebook, all of our social media things. Check out our websites. And yeah, we'll be back soon.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888. Or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.